The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go, don't!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
Welcome to another week in the Computer Corner. We hope everybody had a great Christmas and Hanukkah and Ramadan and Kwanzaa and whatever else. Is there something else?
Like the past 10 years, maybe.
The past 10 years?
Yeah, it's the end of the decade.
If you had a great decade?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the decade's sort of drawing to a close.
Here and gone and no time fast.
And so today we're going to talk about the last decade of technology. We are the Data Doctors, by the way, your Data Doctors of the day today. Brandon Disney, that's me. Across from me, far, far away in our new studios here, Kevin Church.
I have a little bit of separation anxiety next to you right now. Not used to being this far away.
It's kind of weird. And then to his right, my left, and for you, sort of all around, Robert D'Arezzo.
Hello.
Or Robert D'Arezzo, if you want to just totally Americanize it.
Americanize. So, I got my contacts in today so I could see you.
You've got your contacts in?
Yep.
It's fantastic. So today we're talking about, as usual, technology, about computers, about the things that make your life more gooder. Or the things that frustrate you, the things that are the necessary evils, the things that that consume our lives and are around us and have become ubiquitous in the world. And it's every week and this week as well that we have a topic. We come to the show with something to sort of get things started off with, to kick things off with, to get you thinking, to get you talking, to get you interacting. And this week, we're talking about the last decade in technology, and there's been a lot of things that have happened in the last decade. And it's, if you think back to, you know, right now, 10 years ago, we were getting ready for finding out exactly what was going to happen for the big Y2K, the scare that wasn't. And so that was 10 years ago today. And in the last 10 years, a lot of things have happened. There's a lot of things that we use and consume on a daily basis today that didn't exist 10 years ago. And so in technology years, we're talking like 100 years, right? And there's been a lot that's happened. And we're going to talk about some of the highlights, some of the lowlights, and some of the things that are our favorites. And we invite you to, of course, join us and tell us about your favorites. And, of course, call with whatever your questions, your problems, your issues are. Maybe you got some new technology for Christmas, need some help in figuring out a direction to go, or you're looking to take advantage of some of those Boxing Day. That's what they call it in Canada, eh? After Christmas sales, the things that are out there, you're looking to take advantage of that, or you're looking forward to the new year and what's coming down the pike. We can help with those kinds of questions, those kinds of ponderings, whatever those things are. 602-277-5827. It's 277-KTAR. That's the number Kevin thinks you should call if you've got those kind of questions. Of course, if you're outside of Phoenix or you want to participate in the digital method, you can join us online at datadoctors.com/radio. It's datadoctors.com. Click where it says radio show if you are not slash inclined. And there you'll find today's topic. You'll find links, resources, all kinds of things that we've sprinkled up there. And we'll talk about some of those things as the show progresses. You'll also find links to ask questions, make suggestions, and participate in our blog. And, of course, then follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or if you want to get this show streamed right to you when it is all complete, you can subscribe to our podcast there. So datadoctors.com/radio, that's sort of our home online for this show and has all kinds of ways for you to participate, get involved, give us feedback, get more, sort of extend the show. Whatever it is you're looking for, it's all right there. So that's sort of the premise of the show. That's where things begin and where we'll roll from. So you guys get anything cool for like technology gifts, or did you give anything cool for technology gifts last couple of days?
Well, I bought myself a gift. I bought myself one of those 46-inch LED screen TVs from Samsung.
LED TV?
LED TV.
Those are those like inch thick, super thin, super clear.
Looks, super bright.
Looks better. Like you need to have eye implants because it looks too good.
It looks so good that movie magic is completely gone. It looks like you're watching them film the movie.
Do you see like the fishing line or the strings or whatever that prop things up?
There was one that I watched, Pearl Harbor with Ben Affleck. I saw that at a store on one of those 120 hertz TVs.
Do you just watch that over and over, Kevin?
It's Ben Affleck.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
I'm Matt Damon at home thinking about Ben Affleck.
Right.
But the movie always looks so good that the special effects look like a cartoon. The actors, you could see the makeup on them. It was ridiculous.
You could
it
see
ruined
the,
everything.
You could see the imperfections in the acting.
Yeah. So TV has gotten too good.
Too good.
And you went and decided to buy one of these. Did you buy it because it's super thin? Did you buy it because it's super clear? Did you buy it because it's the latest, greatest thing? What was the thing that said, I got to have this?
Well, there was a lot that went into it. One, space saving. The other one was gaming. The details are a lot better for games. Of course, the movies, you know, unless the movie's well put together, you're going to see the flaws in every movie.
Right.
But it was size, just how it looked, and the price. Price was pretty banging. So.
Pretty banging.
$800.
That means good, right?
Pretty good.
All right.
Yeah, I don't listen to hip hop. I don't get it.
It's pretty. Hey, Kevin, it's pretty banging.
Banging.
Yeah, you know, you say banging. That's how you American it
banging.
Up.
Banging.
Right.
I bought my parents' Blu-ray player.
Oh, yeah?
Well, a lot of the movies that are coming out, they have an HD TV, but they've got like a VCR connected to it. It doesn't.
They've got a what connected to it?
A VCR.
What's that? Never heard of it.
It's back in the old days.
That must have been more than a decade ago.
It's been a while.
Yeah, because DVD was out a decade
ago. So I sprung, got him a Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
Let him borrow a movie or two so they could see the difference.
See? So you guys got involved in the hype and participated in the whole technology thing.
Well, Blu-ray, one year ago, was like $300-$400 for a player. And this year, you know, they're selling for like $100-$130 for the good name brands.
When I go back 4 years, I remember the HD DVD versus Blu-ray. And everyone was like, which one do I buy? $500 a pop. And you had to buy them both to get all the movies.
So that's one of the things that happened in the last decade. Technology, actually, that happened in the last couple of years. And there was a war that went on between two different formats. And at the end of the day, the war was won by Sony and the Blu-ray. And some people say that wasn't the right winner. It's an inferior technology.
There's another
whatever.
War that it was, emerged it was, out of that.
It was Sony's turn, by the way. They lost every other war.
Yeah. There's another war going on right now between the streaming video and the need to even buy DVDs. Netflix, which you can rent movies on, you know, through the internet, and they send them to your house.
Yeah.
Now you can stream that stuff directly to your TV through the internet. So why would you buy a DVD
in high definition?
Yeah, but the same argument holds for CDs, which I haven't purchased an actual CD in a really long time because everything's available through iTunes or Walmart Download Music or go steal it from the internet or do whatever you're going to do, right? But last time I checked, the stores are filled with discs and DVDs, or CDs and music still. And it's got to be because people are buying them, not because they want to just display a bunch of products. So, you know, the day those are dead, then I'd expect that movies will follow short behind. But there's still got to be quite a bit of people buying content sort of the old-fashioned way because they want to own it. They want to make sure they have a backup copy. They want to, you know, they want to be able to take it with them. Whatever it is that's still prompting people to go get the old-fashioned disc. I have a feeling that's going to stick around for a while.
It's not a
technology limitation. It's more of a people like to have a tangible thing to touch and hold, I think.
But if you have access to borrow it anytime you want, I think that's kind of a decade from now. I kind of see
maybe.
That happening. You borrow it, you watch it, you hear it anytime you want, but you don't have it on a hard drive. You don't have a physical copy. You just on demand when you want, listen to whatever.
Whenever you're looking for it.
Yep.
Well, we're looking for you and your thoughts, your feedback on what's happened in technology in the last decade, of course. If your question or if your concern or your comment or whatever it is isn't along those topics, that's fine. If it's about technology in general, that's for us. And 602-277-5827 is the number you'll dial. All the lines are booked up now. When you hear somebody hang up as we progress, that's your time to call in. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we've got Terry, we got Jason, we got Pat, we got Bill, we got Larry, and we're waiting for you at datadoctors.com/radio. Back right after this. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're looking back at the last decade in technology, and well, we're we're adding a little technology to our lives as well. Kevin and Robert, get this, just learned how to turn on and off their own mics.
Well, let's not jump ahead of ourselves. We learned that we have the capability.
All right.
Let's try it right now.
Let's see if we can remember it.
Now, both of you turn on. Now talk.
Very nice.
Nice.
See?
Very nice.
See, now you know how. So now you're in charge.
I push the button, not you push
the
button.
That means Pete's got one less thing to do. I'd rather him focus as much as possible on making us sound good. And if you guys aren't on, we probably sound the best. I love you.
Nice.
Anyway, we're talking about the technology of the last decade and some of the cool things that have come along that have changed our lives or added to our lives or maybe subtracted from our lives a little bit. Yeah, I mean, the big thing, like we were talking about 10 years ago, Y2K. You guys were both sort of in the biz, in the industry, or at least in the buzz of Y2K, right?
I thought it was going to be the end of the world.
I actually was about to go to NAU, Northern Arizona University, so I had a part-time job in a bookstore during that time, and I saw the most freaks and that I've ever seen. People that thought the world was going to blow up, that the banks would or the computers would turn into Terminator and go after people, and I'm not exaggerating. It was pretty crazy.
People were buying generators. People were buying canned food. They thought that all the computers were going to crash. No one was going to be able to buy anything. Everyone's going to lose their money. People were taking cash out.
Tons of books on wilderness survival, and it was awesome.
So you guys weren't around the world of data doctors back then, but Ken and I somehow got roped into doing a we'll call it a marathon edition of the Computer Corner. We started our broadcast at 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve. And we were to go until 5 a.m. New Year's Day.
Wow.
And the whole idea was that as the world transitioned to Y2K, as everything technology went awry, we would be here to talk about whatever was happening and be able to offer advice. And so we just said, well, we'll just sort of do a regular show. And, you know, because it's late, we're going to be extra goofy. And so we both had our wives down to kind of be cheerleaders and hang out and bring us coffee and energy drinks and whatever. And we went on the air at 10 and sort of for the first 2 hours just did a regular show and we had people calling in and whatever. And just before midnight, we thought, okay, well, if anything's going to happen, it's time. But of course, we had recognized sort of a few days before that, midnight comes for other parts of the world a lot sooner. So by the time it gets to Arizona, we've already gone through New Zealand and Australia and all kinds of places overseas. And then we've made it already, of course, through the Eastern time zone, Central time zone, and then finally into Arizona. And so, you know, if nothing happened in the rest of the world, chances are Arizona wasn't going to be really a whole lot different. And so it was sort of a moment where nothing happened and it wasn't sort of a big surprise. And there were those that said, well, you ought to just go on and talk about all the doom and gloom because if you're wrong, well, hey, at least it's good news. And there were those that said, no, you should go on and just make fun of everybody because you should be different. Everybody in technology is talking about all the awful things that could happen, so why not be different? So Ken and I sort of took an approach where we said, you know, there's lots of practical things that are going to happen. And the reality is a lot of damage was caused to technology and computers because of Y2K, but it really had little or nothing to do with the technology issues that people were focused on. People were so focused on, oh my gosh, something bad is going to happen, that they did things differently and out of the norm with their technology. For example, businesses that have servers, those servers generally run 24/7, 365, and they're down for some kind of scheduled maintenance things, but generally they're running all the time. Well, a few days before Y2K, Friday afternoon rolls around, everybody's leaving, the IT guys decided, I know what I'll do. If something bad's going to happen, I'll shut my machine down. Y2K will come, and I can always not turn my machine on until we've figured out how to solve the problem. I'll not turn the server on until then. And so everybody shut down servers and things and then went away for the weekend and, of course, came back Monday after Y2K, powered everything up, and then found themselves with technology problems. Hard drives dead. Power supplies failed. Those kinds of things because these machines were used to running 24/7, 365. And when you shut something down that has moving parts and lubricants and things, those things don't sometimes like to start back up. And so there were unintended consequences of dealing with a different technology problem. And we saw a lot of that kind of stuff. And that was maybe the biggest news of all the Y2K news there was. Anyway, we're taking a look over the next hour and a half at the past decade in technology. We invite you to give us a call if you're interested, 602-277-5827. 277-KTAR. We're going to take a quick timeout here, get you caught up with some traffic, some weather, some news, and when we come back, straight away to your calls. It is the Computer Corner. Kevin Church, Robert DeRizio, Brandon Disney back right after this. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're talking about the last decade of technology, some of the ups, the downs. We've got resources posted for you online at datadoctors.com/radio. And while you're there, we invite you to participate in the show. You can ask questions, make suggestions, follow us on Facebook, which, by the way, is sort of our early warning system if something happens in the in-between times. You know, we're here for you every Saturday, but technology happens and issues occur every day out there, and as those things happen and as those things occur, we warn you about the problems and things, and we do it through our fan page at Facebook. If you're looking for just a direct way to get there, facebook.com/datadoctors, and just click the I want to be a fan or add fan page. What's the button that says?
Become a fan.
Become a fan. You click that button, and we'll hook you up with whatever knowledge and things happen during the week. It's that simple.
You know what's a cool piece of technology that I'm really thankful for is we look at the mouse.
Wait,
10 years ago.
You're thankful for technology?
I'm thankful for technology.
Oh, this is a Thanksgiving show. All right. Tell me about the mouse.
You remember the mouse was a rollerball 10 years ago, and now they're laser. No more sticking of the ball, no more having to pull the ball apart, no more having to clean it down, no more jittery mouse.
See, so this is one that's a little lost on me because I don't know what kind of greasy mess you're rolling your mouse around in, bro, because I don't remember cleaning my mouse ball all that often before.
It was a mess for me.
What are you doing where your mouse is at?
You know, I don't know. I don't think I did anything different, but it was
horrible. Were you cleaning your mouse ball, mouse rolling device often?
Occasionally there was, you know, dust settles on the desk, and when you move the mouse over it, you know, some of that gets in there. But I never worried about, like, car grease or cockroaches getting into the rollerball. But what was nice with the optical, you didn't necessarily need a mouse pad if you had the right surface. So you didn't have to stay in, like, this 1-foot by 1-foot area. You could just kind of move it wherever.
Well, when you
so if you're just violently clicking around on the internet, you don't have to worry about staying on the mouse pad.
Oops, I fell off the pad.
Well, when you have like high resolution set and you're running that little mouse ball and you're trying to click the red X, and every time you jump over the red X because the ball didn't have a good precise
point. Yeah, see, I never had that problem either. So, I mean, I like the optical, cool, but to me it wasn't like anything big. It was like, oh, all right, whatever. That's neat.
I was more excited by the fact that I didn't have to have a 400-pound monitor. I could get these little LCD,
the thin and the depth, right? Because you'd put that the big monitors, you start getting like a 19-20-inch monitor, that thing was like 2 feet deep. You got to pull your desk away from the wall and your monitor's touching
my
it
head,
and you
felt like it was being just gonna blow up from like the high-pitched noises,
the buzz
of those
noise.
CRTs.
You turn it on horrible. And the whole thing would like shake
just
for a minute.
Rays of cancer coming off of it to this nice little greener screen.
With no noise. No frequency.
More gooder.
So that's wow. We're gonna have to think of some better stuff. But before we get into that, let's jump on the phones because we got some people that have been hanging out for a long time. And we want to get their problems solved, their help their way. Let's start first with Terry, who's up first here on the Computer Corner. Terry, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Happy holidays. How can we help you?
Thanks. I've had a computer that's XP, and it's been linked on a network with a Vista computer for the longest time, never had problems. And then all of a sudden, I started getting it. First, it was intermittent, where I couldn't connect to the internet, and the message said local area connection, a network cable is unplugged. I checked all the cables. Everything looked fine. Finally, at one point, it was no longer intermittent. It's just permanent message now, and I can't connect to the internet. I've even tried connecting my computer directly to the modem itself, and when I do that, I get a new message that says the connection has limited or no connectivity. You might not be able to access the internet or some network resources, and the reason is that there's no IP address.
Yeah, your computer's having trouble getting its basic sort of communication information from the network. And so either some configuration stuff has changed where inadvertently or otherwise somebody's gone in and set network settings, which is probably not the case, but a possibility. The more likely scenario is that something has happened to the network card in the machine, and it's just damaged now.
The Ethernet card?
Yeah, there's a in older computers, it was a separate add-on card in any computer probably in the last 3-4 years.
Yeah, this is an older computer.
Yeah, so it would have just been built on the main board. And these things, over time, you know what, when a machine gets to be 4 or 5 years old, sometimes this kind of stuff happens. There are little electrical surges and things that sometimes can take place and transfer through the Ethernet cables.
Because when I go on the device driver itself, it says it's functioning okay. Is it lying?
As far as Windows is concerned, it knows how to address it and talk to it, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily able to communicate. And the types of messages and things you're getting, it's telling me that there's a decent chance that that network card may be on its way out. If it's an actual physical add-in card that was added after the fact and wasn't part of the main board,
it was built into the computer. It's all part of one big piece of hardware in
okay.
there.
Yeah, that's called the main board or the motherboard. So those can be disabled generally, and you can add an add-in card. These cards cost like $20 to $30, and generally, that'll solve the problem if it's a hardware issue. Now, it is still possible that it's a configuration issue, and you'd simply, if it comes up and has that limited connectivity, it ought to have like a troubleshooting kind of wizard it can take you through, and running through that wizard would set it back to sort of the defaults. If that's not solving the problem, then my best guess would be that it would be a hardware issue. The only other thing you could try, do you know how to boot into safe mode?
Not really.
Okay, so you'd restart your computer, and you know how first when it starts up, it has like some, generally a screen with white text on a black background as it says loading Windows, and then it goes to the Windows
right.
logo. So at that screen, before it gets the Windows logo, when it's that white text, black background, if you start tapping the F8 key, it'll bring up a menu for you. And in that menu, there will be all kinds of options. One of them is safe mode, and you'd want to actually choose one that's safe mode with networking, if that option's available.
Okay.
What this does is it starts Windows up with just the bare basic essentials of what it needs to run. And in your case, safe mode with networking also will start the basics of networking. If things work in that configuration, the screen's going to look ugly. Some options may be slow. It may be a little bit weird, but this is just a temporary sort of diagnostic thing we're going to do. But if your internet connection works when you're in that mode, that means that we don't have a hardware problem. There's some other issue with the operating system itself.
Okay.
If you have the same issue, then we've pretty much eliminated all those other possibilities, and we're down to it's time to add add-in card and disable the onboard, and life goes on.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it, and I hope that helps.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I think I picked the right button. These phones are a little bit funky. They don't have, like, words on them. They have like these universal symbols.
Like Braille?
Yeah, well, there's a big square with brackets around it.
Okay.
Guess what that button is?
Hold.
No, that's the hold button, of course.
Okay.
And then there's a little, like a dot with a square around it.
Oh, I've actually got the legend next to me.
The legend of the phone?
Yeah. Of everything.
In a world, there was a phone. It was the legend of the phone.
That one might become self-aware, so be careful.
All right. I'll be careful with that. Back in more phones. Ooh, we've got somebody. I don't even understand what this thing's talking about. We're going to find out by talking to Jason, who's up next here on the Computer Corner. Jason, welcome.
Hey, I had a question about my laptop. I had recently tried to put more memory in it. I'm running a 32-bit Vista, and I was told that it can recognize up to 4 gig in memory. But the system properties only show 2300 meg.
Okay.
But the BIOS does show the full 4 gig, and I was wondering if I'm ever going to be able to utilize that in 32-bit or not.
In 32-bit Vista, it will not recognize 4 gig of RAM. There's a physical limitation. It's like it's just 3. Over 3 gigs. Yeah, 3.3 gigs roughly. So that's the absolute max that that Windows 32-bit is going to ever recognize. Now, there's another limitation, which is your hardware, and it may be that your laptop won't recognize more than a certain amount, and what that amount is sort of varies from manufacturer and model to model. Then there's a third component here, which is in laptops. Most often, the video card or the thing that helps with the display, it uses some of the system memory, the RAM that you put in, to be able to produce the picture and the video and what you see on the screen. And so it'll sort of steal some of that away from the system RAM that's available. And so it'll reduce whatever the amount is that's the maximum the machine will take by, you know, sometimes 64 meg, sometimes up to 512 meg, half a gig, basically. So
gotcha.
You said you've put in 4 gig. It's recognizing about 2.3 gig of that?
Right.
So my guess is that the machine either has a limitation of maybe 2.5 gig total, or it may be, you know, that onboard video that's on that thing may be consuming more memory than sort of what's standard. Sometimes in the BIOS, you can go in and change the options of how much the video or how much is devoted to the video.
I did see that.
Yeah, so you can go in there and turn down the amount of memory allocated to the video, but you're in no circumstance are you going to get past 3.3 gigabytes, and in your case, because it's a laptop, you're probably not going to top 3 gig.
But that's plenty of RAM anyway.
What is it you're trying to accomplish, or what is it, I mean, what's happening here?
Well, I put more in it because I'm taking some classes at college where I'm running things like Adobe Photoshop and Adobe Premiere and things like that, and just I wanted to be able to run the browser, you know, internet while I'm doing this stuff. So
yeah, I mean, if you're having real big slowdown issues, first max out the RAM, that's great, but there's a lot of other things you can do to get back system resources, which is going to translate to better performance for you. And some of those things are addressing the number of running processes or number of running programs that Windows has sort of by default. And so if you were to be sitting in front of your machine right now and you did the old three-finger salute, which is the Control-Alt-Delete, it's going to bring up a couple of different options for you. One of them is the Task Manager. And so when we look at the Task Manager, if you have that up in front of you, you click on the Processes tab and make sure you check the box that says Show Processes from All Users. That number of running processes there for a lot of people, that'll be 80, 90, 100, 120 processes. These are all running programs that are all working at that moment. For computers that are in generally good shape, that have been properly, you know, this has been sort of properly addressed and these have been reduced or eliminated, that'll be down in the low 40s, mid 40s, depending on your operating system, and maybe into the 50s if you're running Vista or Windows 7. That's sort of a healthy machine. And so if your number is significantly larger than that, then you've got some work to do in going in addressing some of those processes. Now, that brings up a whole other issue, which is where do I start? Where do I go? How do I address? How do I know what to keep? And that becomes a much more in-depth conversation that's dependent a lot on what you see.
Okay. So if the number of processes is normal, and I bought the computer like 2 years ago, then 2.3 gig is pretty reasonable, and my hardware is working fine.
I would think, but, you know, you can also, where you bought the RAM, if they don't offer some assistance in helping you make sure that you're maximizing what your purchase is, I'd look at returning it and finding somebody that's going to help you out with more than just, here's a stick of RAM, good luck.
On top of that, what antivirus program are you running?
Nothing.
Tell you what, we got to take a quick time out here. I'm going to put you back on hold. I think I did that. And maybe we'll grab you off the air real quick. We're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, more of your calls and questions. It's the Computer Corner back right after this. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. While you were gone, we were talking to Jason sort of off the air. And he's trying to run a couple different Adobe products, pretty high-end photo products, plus being able to do a web browser, all these things. And he was hitting what he thought was a limitation of the operating system as far as the amount of memory he had. But as we talked to him a little bit more, one of the things I just asked him is, you know, this machine, how old is it? Well, about 2 years old, year and a half. Okay. What'd you pay for the machine? It sounds like a weird question because, you know, what's the make, what's the model? But you know what? By the time I go and research what the make and the model is, asking what you paid for, it's going to tell me a ton about sort of what classification the machine's in.
And that was 2 years ago, classification.
Right. And so he said it was about $600, maybe $700 all in. This is a great case where what he's trying to do with the computer probably doesn't match the level of machine that he bought. So it's not that he can't do it. It's just he's running into some brick walls. He's maxed out on the amount of memory the machine physically is going to see, and he's out looking for a solution to it by changing the operating system or going to 64-bit or doing all these things. And I'm not saying this to make fun of Jason or to disparage him in any way. I'm trying to make a bigger point, which is make sure that what you're buying matches what it is you want to do. And so rather than go, and I know as a consumer, you're out there, you're looking at things. It's easy to just get focused on the gigahertz and gigabytes and then take those gigahertz and gigabytes and think that there's those you can compare apples to apples across brands. And then the only thing you have left to decide on is, well, what's the best price, right? And the reality of the world is that there's a lot more that goes into that buying decision. And part of what we talked about, Jason and I, is that for the stuff he's trying to do, he needs something that's more of a business grade or pro grade kind of equipment.
A $600 machine even today wouldn't do it.
It's just, it'll do it. It's just going to be frustrating and you're going to max out some things. And that's just the reality. And so make sure that you're having a conversation with whoever it is you're working with, wherever it is you're buying, about what it is you would plan to do, not just today, but what you can envision doing down the road. Now, if 2 years ago what he wanted to do and what he's doing today are different, then that's just what he wants to do has changed. But if what he wanted to do, if he was talking to somebody about what he wanted to do 2 years ago when he made that purchase, and this is the machine they guided him towards, somebody did him
wrong.
A really big disservice, right? So anyway, I'll get off the soapbox. So some of the things we've got posted at our site, datadoctors.com/radio, are some of the big sort of the top 10, if you will, technology ups, downs, whatever.
I have a new one. We were talking about technology advancements and how we interact with technology today is different than 10 years ago.
Like
you know,
what?
Everything
like
was push, now it's touch. From touch, we're going to see motion, interactivity.
So what do you mean? When you say push, what's that mean?
You know, pushing buttons like on the cell phone compared to iPod, which is everything's going touch. We're also seeing Windows 7 utilizing touch interactivity and Apple using touch interactivity.
So a little bit more intuitive interface where you see something you want, and even a baby can figure this out, right? You touch what you want.
Yep.
Versus grab this little ball thing like the BlackBerry has and wheel it around and then click on something you want.
And
big difference, right?
And we're going to the motion interactivity. You know, kind of like what Project Natal is going to bring to us.
So that's maybe cool. This decade?
That's going to be this decade.
By the way, when we're referring to the coming year, right now we're going to call it 2010, right? When we get there, like right now we say 09 as the shortened version. What are we going to say? Do we say 10?
I would say 10 because it's one syllable rather than two.
But if I just said to you, hey, remember back in 08? When we did blah 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 blah, that sounds sort of normal, and you're like, "Oh, I get it, right?"
Remember, back
I don't have to say the year 08. I just say 08. You get it, right?
But I remember saying 98.
Are we going to say 010?
10.
Some people think 010.
010.
Which sounds odd to me.
Yeah, I like 10.
2010.
2010.
2010. 10.
I like 2010.
10. What are we going to do? This is my big dilemma. So if the next decade, the coming decade, the decade of the tens and the teens and whatever else, if motion's the thing, then I can't wait for the decade after, which is where it really needs
thought.
To get mind control. Exactly.
Yep.
See, you just read my mind. It's already here in this room. We got some cool new technology around here, right, Pete? The way you do the show, pretty much it looks the same from the uneducated eye. But some of these buttons and whistles and things that you got going on in there, that's pretty high-tech stuff. The phones that we use now, whole different kind of communication system. You should have seen the old studios we were in. It's what we would refer to as the ghetto as far as the phones. It wasn't quite the pulse rotary dial kind of phone, but it was the next thing just invented right after that. And here we've got the stuff that everybody's going to start getting in the next couple of years. And so a big leap forward in technology has happened here for this radio station, at least. What kind of new technology is going to happen in your world? I don't know. We're going to talk more about the technology that's happened in the last decade when we come back from this break. Of course, we've also got your calls, your questions, 602-277-5827, including who's up first, Pat, who has major defrag problems. I know that's a frustration for lots of you. So we're going to talk to him straight away when we come back right here on the Computer Corner. Stick around.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go, don't!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
Welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. In case you're just joining us, we've been talking a little bit about the last decade in technology. We've got resources posted for you, datadoctors.com/radio. It's datadoctors.com. You click where it says radio show if the slash confuses you. And there we've got ways for you to get involved with the show. You can ask questions, make suggestions, become a Facebook fan, which has a lot more to it than being a fan. It's our early warning system. You can follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to the podcast. It's all right there. Anytime, online, all the time. datadoctors.com/radio. Easy.
That was easy.
Sort of. So the last decade in technology, we're going to put that thought on hold for a minute, and we're going to switch gears to something we do each and every week. We call it our Geek Speak of the Week. Insert music here.
Bong.
That's music?
I don't know. It's a noise.
Can you guys like do a little beatbox, like a little acapella thing? There we go.
Speak of the week.
Are you kidding me? Was
you
that
wanted something?
Yeah, Pete's impressed. We're gonna make sure we. I'm gonna. You know what I'm gonna do? We're recording the show, of course. I'm gonna take that. I'm going to cut it up, and I'm going to send it to you so you can do this, too. And we're going to distribute to everybody at Data Doctors. That's the new ringtone when Robert calls.
That's awesome.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
There we go.
If you could do a beat from, like, Bill Biv DeVoe, I'd be a bigger fan.
Yeah, we'll do that off the air.
Yeah.
We'll go down to one of the little projection studios and, yeah. Anyway, Geek Speak of the Week. This week's Geek Speak of the Week, Mr. Robert.
It's airplane mode.
Airplane mode. Now, some of you have an iPhone.
Uh-huh.
You're familiar with airplane mode on it or other phones too, Blackberries and whatnot. They have an airplane mode, right? It's where you sort of just disable all the calling features so that you can use all the toys. I mean, let's face it, so you can play solitaire and listen to music while you're on the airplane, right? But our Geek Speak of the Week has a little bit different meaning.
Well, I don't know what else it could mean besides a toggle switch on your phone, right? Airplane mode.
Don't play with me, Robert. Read the dang thing.
Well, when you turn on airplane mode on your iPhone, it really pretty much, you lose a lot of functionality, right? You're almost not in touch with the world.
Dude, all the important stuff still works. My games, my music.
What about phone calls?
Don't care about that.
They're not going to work anyway because of who the carrier is. But...
Airplane mode. Get to the point. Come on, dude.
So airplane mode, I guess, would say if you are in airplane mode as an individual, you're out of touch with everybody, friends, family, you're kind of doing your... You're staying away from everybody.
Like I did for the last couple of days.
You're on the down low.
I was actually in a place that really I have no reception. Forget the regular troubles. No reception. None.
So like right in the middle of Phoenix?
No. I was up north and there was snow
like
on the ground.
Like 3 miles north of?
North a ways. Okay. Anyway.
So if you were mad.
I was in airplane mode on purpose. Both my phone and life. I didn't check email. No Facebook. No Twitter. No texting. No calls. No.
Stay
None of
away.
That. Technology was on hold while we did the whole, you know, celebration thing. Then I got back in the car last night, started driving back down to the valley, and decided to take my phone and my life out of airplane mode. And 5 seconds later, it's bring, 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 all these text message alerts, all this other junk. I'm like, oh, gosh, I missed that.
You know, I'm in airplane mode no matter where I go because of my carrier anyway, so I'm always untouchable.
And that is a commercial for a telephone
Fill
carrier to be named. Anyway.
You know, they do those, the big ones, AT&T and Verizon, have this awesome feud going on where
it's
they're
great.
Arguing about each other's maps, where Verizon has all of these red areas and we're amazing, but look at AT&T's horrible map. And then AT&T hired a Hollywood actor to come in and say, oh, no, actually, this is a real map.
Mm-hmm.
I like the feud. It's kind of like the PC Apple feud, but it's a lot more bitter
Yeah, they're a lot less beating around the bush about this thing, huh?
I like it.
You know what I like is on my phone. Since we're gonna rag on the thing, and I mean people care about this that are listening, right?
Yeah.
So on my phone, I can be standing and I'll go to make a call, and oh crap, I got no bars, I got nothing. But it doesn't say no service. It's just like blank slate, right? I'll stand there for a minute and stare at my phone, and maybe it's just I'm an intimidating guy. Probably not, but maybe. And while I'm looking at that spot where it shows the bars, you know, the more bars in more places, suddenly it'll start growing and it goes one bar, two bar, three bar. Suddenly I got five bars, 3G. I'm fully hooked up where a second ago, and I'm standing in one spot. I'm not moving the phone. I'm not raising, lowering. There's no antenna. There's nothing, right? I went from pretty much no service to full on hooked up everything I need service.
Maybe your phone went on a smoke break.
It went on airplane mode all by itself, yeah. I think.
So when you make the phone call, that's when it drops again.
Well, of course.
You know, I carry a harness so I can climb a tree. I pull it out of my trunk, wrap it around my waist. I pick the big palm tree, and no problem.
You know what? There's an app that allows you to say, hey, I'm not getting service, but in order for it to report to the company, it has to have service.
That I thought was going to be my favorite new app on the iPhone. It's an app made by AT&T. It's called Mark the Spot. It makes perfect sense on paper. Check this out. Anytime a call drops, anytime you have no data coverage, whatever, they have all these choices. You just touch a button and say submit, and it gets your GPS location. Everything's cool, right? So I thought, of course they're smart enough that, you know, you're going to be doing this when you're having service problems. So of course it's smart enough to sort of queue that up. And next time you get back into a service area, it'll just throw the message out to them, right? Of course they're smart enough to think of that. Not. Next time you have a dropped call, go ahead and do them a favor. Report it to them. Watch what happens. Oh, I'm sorry. There's no coverage. And Nada, would you like me to retry this later? It just doesn't have any coverage. So now here's another part of my favorite thing. So when you decide you're going to be a good guy and report this bad area, and you happen to be in a spot that allows you to do so,
it's going to report the good spot, isn't it?
It thanks you for reporting it. So far, we're good. Thanks for telling us about a problem, our engineers, or you know, whatever. I don't care. You have to say okay to that. Fine. A little annoying. Tell me one time, the first time I submit one, I'm good, but whatever. Sorry, Pete, this is my rant. You submit this thing. 30 seconds later, you get a text message. And it's like a two-page long text message. This thank you from service provider. This is a free text message. You have not been charged. We appreciate you reporting this. They thanked me in the application every time. And then they send me a free text message to thank me and to let me know that they got it. I don't want those things. I want a setting to turn that off. I'm happy to report to you the problems, but not if you annoy the
crud out of me.
Crud out of me. Yeah. Stop annoying me.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's my rant.
Well, so I'm maybe over. We should just go back 10 years to those old Nokias that we switched the faceplates on.
No.
You know, those big tanks.
I love the phone. Don't get me wrong. Just some annoying things.
It'd be awesome, though. You got this phone with all these awesome apps, and it's so awesome. The best part of the phone is making a phone call.
Right, right.
And insert whatever word you want. It doesn't necessarily work.
So my prediction is 10 years from now, we will not be talking about the poor quality of this device because it won't survive if it has that kind of problem 10 years from now.
10 years from now, there won't be a phone. It'll be a brain chip transplant, right?
Well, I'll tell you what there will be 3 minutes from now.
Oh, no.
It's more Computer Corner. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick time out. When we come back straight away to Pat, who's been hanging out a really long time. And Pat, right behind you is Larry. So you sit tight. The rest of you folks on hold, sit tight. 602-277-5827. That's the number. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. We've got resources for you if you're interested in things like October 2001. You know what happened in October 2001?
Jeez, I can't.
Windows XP launch party.
Ah, that's right.
I remember that. I actually got to work at an electronics retailer for that at midnight.
How about 2002? Just the year somewhere. Office. Something we use every single day. Probably. Most of us. Wi-Fi.
Ah.
Wireless, you know, Wi-Fi. Wireless like not... You know, not like your cell phone wireless, but like wireless, you're like chilling out at your house kind of wireless or at the Starbucks or whatever. Wireless sort of becomes big time. Firefox. Many of us use that as our now default regular everyday browser. November 2004. A lot of stuff in the last decade, right? Napster, remember Napster? They were shut down July 2001. So it started prior to the new year, the new millennium in 2000. Was shut down a few years later. Obviously, it's back in a whole different way today. Lots of other stuff. Those resources and more online, datadoctors.com/radio.
Xbox 360, 2005.
You might be right about that. Yep. November 2005.
November.
According to my resources. To the phones?
To the phones.
Up first, it's Pat on the computer corner, or up next, or just up right now. Pat, thank you for holding so long. We appreciate it. How can we help, sir?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You hear me all right? I'm on speaker.
We really dislike the speakerphone when we're on live radio with the rest of the world listening. It's only good for... No, it's not good for anything, actually. So if you could avoid the speakerphone, we'd appreciate it.
There we go.
Oh, 1,000 times better.
All right. I ran a ran the defrag utility the other night, and I didn't make a copy of the report or anything, which I should have. But it, I tried to restart, and it came up an error message that Windows System 32 config system is corrupt or missing. And I ran a check disk. Actually, I ran it twice while I was waiting. And there was one error, and I ran it again, and it evidently cleaned that up, and now we're back to the prompt that if I go and exit that, it'll restart.
Okay, so somewhere, is there a question in here? I'm trying.
Well,
to...
it'll show that same error again. I can't boot up my XP.
You can't boot to Windows at all anymore?
No.
Have you tried booting into safe mode?
Yeah.
And
error comes up.
Okay, so something got damaged, got corrupted within Windows, or you're having the early signs of a hardware failure, and it could be just about anything from a hardware standpoint. It's, you know, if you listen to shows that talk about cars, they always get down to we have to determine before we determine anything else, is this a fuel or a spark problem, right? In the computer world, is this a hardware or software problem? That's step one, and right now we have, like, a check engine light.
Okay. What I did last night, it was a wonderful Christmas day, by the way, I installed, I reinstalled the operating system in another folder and renamed it, and it works fine.
Okay. So then we now know it's probably not a hardware issue. It's definitely a software. So we've solved that one problem. Now, if you want to try to resurrect the other Windows that was there, the better way to go about doing sort of what you did, you reinstalled Windows as a whole new installation. You'd
Correct.
Instead want to install Windows in what's called repair mode.
Right.
And that would go in theory, repair whatever's damaged with Windows by replacing the basic core components of the Windows system files and things.
Understood. Wouldn't do it.
Okay. Well, then, I mean, your options are, you've got a working thing of Windows, which is a sort of a reinstalled in a new folder kind of thing. You can go on with that sort of path that you've started down. Or if you're interested in trying to repair what you've got, you're probably going to have to get somebody who can get in front of the thing and figure out what's going on to get involved. And that's certainly not something that's going to happen in a couple minutes here on the radio.
Oh, I understand that. Okay, if I want to go ahead with the operating system that I installed, how can I transfer my information? How can I get my information from my old system to this new one? I mean, I got
right. The information's already there. That's not really the issue. What you're really probably asking is, how do I get all the programs and settings and things? And the short answer is you don't. That's sort of some of the pain involved with reinstalling, and that's what people oftentimes don't sort of consider when they start down that path. But really, the steps are, you're going to have to go out and get all of the disks and things you have and reinstall the programs you have, and then copy all the data from wherever it was located to where it needs to be now. So, for example, the old My Documents folder needs to be copied into the new My Documents folder, and favorites and so on and so forth, and reestablish all of that. And that is the biggest, toughest part of reinstalling Windows. People don't consider that. That's where the fun really begins. So I don't have specific advice for you, Pat, but that's sort of where you got to go. There's no shortcuts to that, unfortunately. We got to take a quick time out here, get caught up with some news, traffic, weather. When we come back, more of your calls, more your questions, and a little bit more of a look back to the past decade. It's the Computer Corner. Back right after this. All right, I think I got all the right buttons pushed.
I just have one.
Yeah, you've only got one to push over there.
Off, on, and cough.
Cough?
Cough. What's that? Do you get a cough drop?
You hold it down if you're going to cough, you see.
Oh, I thought they dispense like a cough drop or something.
Yeah, try that. Let us know how it works.
That's that common sense thing, Robert.
I guess I don't have it.
Yeah.
So, MySpace. You've heard of that before, right? January 2004, MySpace switches over from its old storage site, which it was supposed to be originally like a place where you could go and create your own little online storage, not like a backup service, but more of a file repository, if you will. MySpace makes a lot of sense for that. And so it was your space, right, your file repository online, and you could upload files. And then they added a sharing mechanism where you could take and I could upload my files and then share a few with Robert so he could check out my, you know, latest spreadsheet on whatever or my adult videos or whatever it was that I'm sharing, right? And later it turned into what we know today. Well, what we know today is a mess, but I guess it turned into social networking, and it was sort of the beginnings, or at least one of the big names in the beginnings of social networking. That happened, that transition happened in January 2004.
Can't believe it's been 5 years, MySpace.
The Facebook, later shortened to just be Facebook, but the Facebook.
The Facebook.
Yeah, the Facebook. It was actually started as by some Harvard dudes as a sort of a directory of different people going to school. And then later they hooked it up with another university, and so you could then blog, chat, whatever, sort of do some early beginnings of social networking. But it was generally amongst some university students. And the got dropped from the Facebook and became just Facebook. And it turned into, obviously, what we know today as probably one of the more popular social networking sites. That was back in 2004 as well. We already talked about the Xbox. YouTube. YouTube was born 5 years ago, February 2005.
Perhaps the greatest time killer on the internet.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
The dancing baby.
The dancing baby. That's one we can forget. So there's all kinds of resources of sort of dates back in time over the last decade at our website, datadoctors.com/radio. We've got those things published there to sort of remind us of how far we've come in a decade. And maybe next week we'll talk about some of the future. Where are we going? What's coming up next? What are the big things and what might we expect to see over the next decade?
There's something I definitely want to see that's been talked about for about 10 years.
Which is?
Virtual reality. We've seen
I think it's been talked about for a lot more
than 10
years.
Dude, the movie Tron in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Come
you're
on
right,
now.
You're right.
And it's coming back in a few months, right? Tron?
Oh, yeah. The new
I don't know. That's going to be a tough movie to remake because I still think the first Tron.
The Lawnmower Man. Do you remember that?
I do remember.
No, it doesn't compare to Tron.
Oh, no. Not compared.
Let's get back to the phones and talk to Larry, who's up next here on the Computer Corner. Larry, welcome.
Yeah, hi.
How can we help, sir?
Yeah, I got a question about Microsoft Office 2000, which I've got loaded on one of the older computers I have.
Wait,
and for Christmas.
You said Office 2000?
Yeah.
You do you recognize that next week is going to be, you know, 10 or 2010 or 2010 or whatever you want to call that?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
So I got an extension to the Smithsonian.
Okay. So you got your Office 2000 and?
And I got for Christmas a 2007 upgrade fart, and I'm wondering, will that work for something that old, or do I just throw it all out and start over?
When you say, will that work, I mean...
Well, will the 2007 actually upgrade that old of a version of Office?
So on the packaging, if they bought it from a retail store, it will say either upgrade or it won't say upgrade to determine whether or not that's the license that you bought. So where the one that does not say upgrade, you can do a fresh installation, then it doesn't matter what you have. If it says upgrade on it, means you have to upgrade from a previous version. And on the side of the box, it will tell you exactly what it upgrades from.
Now, if my memory serves me correctly, their upgrade versions allow you to go back two versions generally with Office. And so in your case, Office 2000 would be covered upgrade. The other thing that they oftentimes do is they allow what's called competitive upgrades too. So if you had a different Office suite, for example, you had the what's the other one called? Star Office, or it used to be called the Novell Office suite. they would allow you to upgrade from that. Now, that may have changed. This is going back to last time I did a quote-unquote upgrade. So, but as Kevin said, the side of the box would really tell you if you bought a box product. If you didn't, then you need to go back to where you bought it from and ask the question, or you could stick the disc in and just give it a shot. The other side of the question is it compatible? Meaning, are the files you created with the old version of Office going to work in the new version? And the answer for that is absolutely. The Word documents, the spreadsheets, the whatever it is you created with the older version of Office, it'll have no problem dealing with that with the new version of Office.
Yeah, okay. No, I appreciate it. I just didn't want to try the upgrade and end up with a bigger mess, whereas if I would have just got a whole new Office Suites package, it would have been simpler and easier.
At the end of the day, I mean, when the upgrade, the technical process that's going to occur is it's actually going to just install from scratch anyway. The difference in the package is what you pay generally, and so the upgrade sometimes is going to cost less money because the idea is they're trying to get you to you know, buy up from an older version, and they're giving you an incentive to do so.
The best piece of advice we could give you is do not open that box before you read the side. My memory doesn't serve me correctly. I'm not sure if they will upgrade 2000 or not, but there was two other versions of Office that came out before 2007 in Office XP and Office 2003. The problem is the second you open that box, you cannot return it to the retailer that you bought it from. So just go ahead, read the side of the box, and it'll tell you. If it doesn't say it, then you can take it back for credit and apply it towards something else. But I'm willing to bet money that it's probably not going to upgrade that.
I forgot that there was another version of Office that we don't like to talk about called Office XP, which was also Office 2002. So there was 2000, 2002, or XP, 2003, 2007, and actually coming out in just a few months will be
2010.
Office 2010, right.
Maybe wait with what you got until 2010 comes out and just buy the full version.
That might be a smarter choice for you, unless you've got something compelling you to take the plunge today, Larry.
No, not right now. Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
You
have
bet.
A good one.
Thanks for the call, and have a great New Year there, sir.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I believe you can get 2010 beta right now.
Yeah, beta 2 just got released a couple of days ago.
I wouldn't recommend anybody that's listening do a beta because it's there for you to use to tell them what the problems are. And if you're trying to avoid problems, getting a beta is probably not the best idea.
There's some people that listen, though, that love to go looking for trouble.
Is there a release date on this thing? Because I don't remember. Seeing one.
Even if there is, it's a lie anyway, so it doesn't matter. I mean, they release it when it's done. I mean, I think they learned the lesson of having a release date and meeting it no matter what, and what you end up with is sometimes a product that's not done, and people don't really tend to like that, a.k.a. Windows ME, Windows Vista, right? Yeah. And so delaying a launch date in the name of completing the project and making it work properly, probably not a bad idea. So even if there is a launch date, I wouldn't believe it. Not until you get, you know, a couple months out from it. But sometime, since they've named it Office 2010, they'll have to probably release it sometime in 2010, be my guess.
Yeah.
Or they'll rename it.
2011.
Either way, not going to upgrade till I have to.
Yeah. Keep what you got until you really need a feature. I'd wait.
Yeah, there's generally no downside to waiting. Unless there's something you're missing that you have to have.
No, it's usually an upside. All of the guinea pigs use it first, and then they fix the product, and then it makes it beneficial to upgrade to.
Hey, you guys want to try a fun one on the phones here?
Yeah.
We got Brian, who's says he's got a Trojan something, 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 and that's what it says on my screen. So
okay, I'll give you a little insight into what's going on here. I have a Trojan.gord that is coming up. What's happening is when I restart the computer, Norton flags it and says it blocked it. And then I get in and I retrace the file path that the Norton gives me. I know you guys aren't big on semantic software, but I retrace the file that Norton gives me, the file path, and it is not there. There's just a DLL file there. So I get in and I search for the overlay.xul, which
hey Brian, just a DLL? DLLs are some of the most dangerous files in a Windows operating system. So if it's saying that that's a Trojan or part of a Trojan, that can be a big problem.
It's saying XUL, not a DLL.
Okay.
It's an overlay XUL that is, from what I've been able to research, it has to do with Mozilla and Firefox.
Yeah, so it generally, The Trojan,
redirect.
Yeah, the Trojan you're talking about will take search results and redirect those results to bad places. It's sort of what I'll call a starter virus, or it's the gateway virus, right? So everybody says that one drug that you smoke is the gateway to all the other bad drugs. So
okay.
This is a gateway Trojan, meaning its whole job in life is to take your search results in Google, Bing, whatever you're searching in, and you'll get your results on the page. That's not the problem. When you click on those results, it redirects you to bad places that
exactly,
really infect
yeah.
you with the really bad stuff. So, and it generally affects the Firefox web browser, and that's sort of where it's limited to, at least today. And it does affect pretty much every Windows operating system out there. And for people who are, you know, I'm Linux, that's safe, and all those other things, it affects Linux users as well. Basically, if you're a Firefox user, you can be affected. And that also would include Macs in some limited capacity as well. So
here's my main question, though. When I restart, it comes up, Norton flags it, says it blocked it. It didn't say it quarantined or deleted it. It said it blocked it. When I followed the directory path to find it, it's not there. There's just a JavaScript file. How is this thing being generated, and how can I eradicate it?
So your best bet's going to be probably, I mean, the quick way to deal with this is when you got a problem like this, it's very specific. If you Google, for example, Trojan space and G-O-R-D, which is the name you gave us, you're going to find real quickly removal steps, better details of what it is, all that kind of stuff. But probably a step you're missing in trying to remove it, if you don't disable system restore before you try to remove it, you'll remove it, and the system restore feature built into Windows, we'll put it right back in for you.
Yeah, because I've seen, you know, a few different things. This is actually a new release of this, apparently.
Yep.
And I found a few things, and I can never quite find a directory path that matches anything out there.
You're probably trying to get a little too technical with this thing. This is on the threat sort of assessment list of the world. If you know, it's like the TSA and their threat advisory, where red is like, oh my gosh, the world's going to end, and green's like, life's cool. This is like barely off the green scale. This is pretty low, and this is a pretty low tech fix. But you need to probably follow some manual removal instructions because of the product you're running, which is the Symantec product. If you just quickly Google Norton space Trojan space Gord, you're going to find step-by-step manual removal instructions if you want to go through that process at their site. And it's pretty brain-dead, pretty simple.
Well, what I did actually is...
Tell you what,
there.
Brian, I'm going to have to put you on hold because we're late for a break. We'll grab you off the air. We'll be back right after this. This is like end of the year music.
That was so epic.
It's like the final countdown.
I feel like boxing, man, running up the steps.
Do you remember the final countdown from a few decades ago?
No.
Sing it, Kevin.
I don't know.
Wow. What is this, Pete? Don't know?
It's pretty epic, though.
Music, loop 64.7.
Like, I want to vanquish or defeat a dragon.
You want to slay something?
Slay something.
I want to slay a fire-breathing dragon.
We can do that. Don't we do that, like, most every day?
But that one, I'd have to grow my hair out a little bit. Almost feels like a Twisted Sister epicness.
So, more dates in the past decade that were sort of technology milestones. I don't mean us. I mean, you know, Nintendo Wii.
Oh, that thing's awesome, isn't it?
So, that launched... Can you guess the date? Can you get just the year?
2006.
2006. Dude, why do you know this?
Because the PS3 launched. You know what I think?
No. What's wrong with you? Answer that question. What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
Okay, maybe the shorter question. What's right with you?
I know these dates. Okay. You know, I think the Xbox 360 was the reason why Blu-ray won. Sony and Toshiba were talking about some sort of compromise.
Wait. The Xbox 360 is why Blu-ray won.
Because...
The Xbox 360, of course, Microsoft chose the HD DVD side, and they had an add-on device, right? They didn't have a Blu-ray. So it how it's responsible for Blu-ray, I want to hear.
Okay, so you have Microsoft that came out with the 360 at E3, and 6 months later, the release date was hit, which caught everyone off guard. In the meantime, Sony and Toshiba were talking about some sort of agreement because they were each fighting for different movie brands.
Right.
And so because 360 was launching, PS3... was going to come integrated with Blu-ray, they had to cut the negotiations with Toshiba to get the PS3 out the next year.
Right.
And because those negotiations were cut.
I'll help you.
I think that's what ended up taking the path that we went to now. If the 360 would have waited another year, who knows how that would have ended up.
This moment of behind the scenes was brought to you by
Robert the Edizzo.
Verizon.
So,
all right.
But the, yeah. So
did any of what he said register?
You know, I pretty much fell off right at the beginning. I didn't care.
Okay.
Either way, I had to buy Blu-ray this Christmas, so whoever won.
I've still resisted the Blu-ray.
Yeah, hey.
You want to hear my rationale? Tell me where I'm nuts.
Where are you nuts?
You've spent a few minutes, and Kevin, you as well, telling me about product demonstrations where you've seen Blu-ray on good TVs, and it's no good. It ruins the experience. That's hit number one for me. Number two, I've got a bunch of movies that are on regular disc, and yes, I know you can stick them in your Blu-ray player and it will play them as well, but I'm going to go spend money to play the exact same discs I already have? No. Hit number two. Hit number three comes when we start talking about, well, anything you buy from now on, you can buy on Blu-ray instead. Well, you spent a while talking about how you don't buy movies anymore. You just download them from Netflix or whatever, right?
Yep.
Okay. Hit number four, because I still got more. If I was going to go actually buy physical discs anymore, because you've already talked me out of them, and you've told me that Blu-ray is no good on a good TV anyway. It's too good. But if I'm going to go buy this stuff, the price of a Blu-ray version of a movie versus the price of a regular DVD version of a movie, almost double, right?
Yep.
Or at least a third, 40% more, 30% more?
The only Blu-ray you're going to get that's in 15 to 20 range is an old one. Anything new is 25.
So help me understand what the upsides are.
My decision did not come easy. And let me tell you, the Blu-ray isn't the problem with movies looking too good. It's the refresh rate of the television and the refresh rate on the player itself.
Okay.
So the higher the number, the better it looks. Well, I don't have anything that's that great, so it looks just fine. It looks like HD programming.
So why Blu-ray?
It looks like my HD programming that I've got on DirecTV. It looks really nice. So
right. You're talking about it more.
It does look pretty awesome with movies as special effects and whatever.
Okay.
Beyond that, it was a couple bucks more than a regular DVD player, so now I've got options.
All right.
That's what I paid for was options.
I'm still not buying it.
You know what really hit it was LED is what makes it look too good.
Unfortunately, LED or not, we're completely out of time. If you missed any part of the show, anytime online at datadoctors.com/radio. And until next time, Kevin Church, Robert De Arezio, and Brandon Disney reminding you, if you don't need it, don't install it. We'll see you right after the new year.